Today's program has been brought to you by 360 Cookware. Their stainless steel cookware uses vapor technology to cook better tasting, more nutritional food. To learn more and receive 20% off, click their logo on our website, heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and we're here at Averta's, as usual. And I know we've just had a New Year's celebration, but there's another one in a few weeks down the road, and it's for the Year of the Snake. That would be Chinese New Year. And coincidentally, I have a wonderful book that can help you out with eating in on that special day. It's ironically called the Chinese Takeout Cookbook, and the author Diana Kwan is here. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Kathy.
Thanks so much for coming. So why did you choose to have takeout food as the sort of focus? There's a lot of Chinese cookbooks out there, and this is kind of like focusing on takeout favorites.
Well, I think I really wanted to make to do a book on Chinese takeout food because it's part of like a larger Chinese American food genre, which is like a genre of its own, and there's no cookbook out there already that focuses on that,
right? Or knowingly focuses,
yeah,
on
or
that.
Knowingly focuses on that. There are plenty of cookbooks that have recipes like
for American Chinese food. Yeah, yeah. It's cool that's like becoming a more aware genre. Mm-hmm. There was the Fortune Cookies Chronicles by Jennifer Ailey a few years ago.
That's
really
actually one
that.
Of the books that inspired me to write this, because I was like reading this book and it was like one of the first books I'd ever read that focused on Chinese food in the U.S. She had all these like wonderful stories about like immigrants and about like the origin of General Tso's and fortune cookies. And I was like reading this thinking it'd be great if there were recipes in this
book.
The
book.
I was like, well, why don't I do like a cookbook to go along
with this. And you get some history in the beginning, which I really liked reading about in your book, but the recipes are just so gorgeous and they're all so tasty and they don't look like your ordinary takeout. They look better.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, and I think that your point here and, you know, from what I can tell and the few recipes I made from it, it is better than getting takeout.
Yeah, and it's faster too if you have all these ingredients in your pantry.
Oh, really? Maybe I should time this. Like, order something and then go boom, boom, and like saute.
Actually, obviously, it depends on the recipe.
The rice would take longer.
Well, yeah, there are some recipes that'll take longer. Obviously, dumplings will take you longer, but noodles and some of the stir fry recipes.
But dumplings are one of those things where it would be so much better when you make it by yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Usually. It could go either way, but most places do not have the awesomeness dumplings in the world.
Yeah, most places make them just a little bit too greasy or heavy.
Were these some things that like kind of got to you? Because I know that Chinese takeout food kind of has a stigma attached to it where it's like greasy, salty, fried.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's why I wanted to do a cookbook that was, like, explaining how you can do all these recipes without, like, MSG or food coloring, and you don't need insane amounts of oil to fry. You could do a lot of the frying recipes with just, like, an inch or two of oil in the pan.
Or you can just get the stir-fried ones.
Or you could just do the stir-fried ones. Plenty of healthy recipes in the book, too.
So what are some that you some of the recipes that you felt you had to, like, work hard to deconstruct? Maybe for the recipe,
There are a few recipes that involve like frying the chicken first, or like the meat,
sesame chicken.
Tso's or orange chicken or sweet and sour pork. Like you have to get the coating right or the batter right.
Yeah.
So that involved a lot of recipe testing to get it to be the right texture without, like, being too eggy, without being too soggy.
Uh-huh. It's an egg and then batter, like flour or something.
Yeah, right? marinated in a little bit of soy sauce and rice wine, mm-hmm. and a little bit of egg white, and then coat it with cornstarch.
Yeah, so that's not unusual, though, for anyone used to doing fried chicken at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's basically the same thing. So this is such a fun cookbook. It's your first cookbook.
Yes, it is.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I know you're a veteran Chinese cooking teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You teach at the ICE currently.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your travels, because I know you have this great blog called The Appetite for China. Appetite yeah. for China. And you wrote that when you were traveling in China.
Yeah, I started when I was traveling in, I was actually living in Beijing at the time. I had moved there to just like work and teach and learn Mandarin. And I started the blog mainly as a way to just record my travels and to like document like all these different foods that I was eating at the time and trying out for the first time. And then it like just slowly evolved into I was getting all these emails from people back home, like asking, how do I make like a great General Tso's chicken sauce, or how do I like fry wontons? And I was like, oh, this is like food that I grew up eating too. Mm-hmm. And it also
you
like,
grew up in Massachusetts.
I grew up in Boston. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like the food that I grew up eating out with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that brought like a wave of nostalgia, and I started like including some like Americanized Chinese recipes on the site too, and then it just like slowly evolved into more and more other cooking from other Asian countries too.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So how was it like totally different food wise between the stuff you're eating in China and the stuff that you're cooking by request from your readers and friends?
It wasn't totally different. The thing that struck me most when I was living in Beijing was that when I was living here, a lot of the food I was used to eating and getting out was like Cantonese or Cantonese style.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like lighter, focusing on more like fresh flavors. In Beijing, they have a very short growing season.
Yeah.
So it's just like a lot of it was just noodles.
Yeah.
Like, or like skewers, like lamb skewers or pork skewers.
Uh-huh.
So it was a little bit like heavier, and then they were obsessed with Sichuan food there, so there was a lot of Sichuan food, so it was just a lot of heavy, spicy foods there that took some getting used to.
And each city and region in China has such a different food cuisine. You wouldn't find it, you know, if you're in Hong Kong, you wouldn't find, you know, the same things as Beijing and so forth.
Yeah.
I think Beijing doesn't have a very good reputation within China for its food.
No, like, the Beijing food is usually, like, imperial food, like, stuff that the emperors
Peking
used to
duck,
eat. Like,
right.
Yeah, but you can't have Peking duck
and
every
the other
day,
stuff is crap.
There are, like, very good, like, small noodle stalls, like, serving mm-hmm. just, like, you know, noodle soups and
from
stuff.
From other places of China. It doesn't have its own.
Yeah.
Thing.
It's just like a melting pot of cuisines from all over China.
Yeah, because it wasn't really the capital for very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ever since maybe like 100 years or so.
100 years. So are you still writing Appetite for China?
Yes, I am.
And how do you like add more dishes? Do you feel like there's like a cap to how many Chinese takeout dishes you could possibly...
There are always like variations that you could do.
Yeah.
The blog isn't like strictly Chinese takeout, I always do like variations like on dumplings. Like
mm-hmm.
you could do like vegetarian dumplings or turkey dumplings or, you know, kimchi dumplings. It's like
totally
just stuff that opens itself to interpretation. And then I haven't been stuck on recipes so far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you've been touring around and sharing the book with folks in bookstores all over the place. Have you ever gotten like a strange reaction? Like, why would you ever write a cookbook when you could just take out? Like, do you get that?
Not really. I think like people who genuinely like Chinese takeout are like intrigued by the fact that you can also make it at home.
Mm-hmm.
I think the strangest reaction, or the reactions that are like strongest that I've gotten was that, oh, this is not quote unquote authentic Chinese food.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what is authenticity actually? Like, food just has to change across cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You can't like Chinese food in China doesn't always stay the same either, moving from province to province. Mm-hmm. Like, Sichuan food in Beijing is not the same as Sichuan food in Sichuan province.
Right.
It just has to change to adapt to, like, local produce and to local people's tastes.
Yeah. And there's so many instances of that we see in New York City, like Italian-American food mm-hmm. and so forth.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like Chinese food in, like, takeout restaurants throughout the city or throughout the country, really, in the world, do you feel like it doesn't change enough? Because I feel like everyone's doing the same, you know.
There are definitely, like, takeout restaurants that that, like, subscribe to the same formula.
Yes.
Like, they get the same, like, fluorescent placards from the same company, and they have the same, you know, 100 dishes that you could do. So
yeah, it's like you have to have these dishes.
Yeah, so
too.
They just feel like they have to, like, stick to a formula.
Yes.
Especially if it's, like, you know, it's just, like, someone who doesn't have a lot of restaurant experience. But I think it's good seeing a lot of things come out, like, you know, Mission Chinese food. Like, they're just,
yeah,
like, trying to be
but
creative.
But that's not from Chinese people.
It is. That's true.
I kind of want to, like talk to some of these, like, Chinese restaurant owners and be like, be different, please.
Yes.
You can do it. But it's a cultural thing.
It is.
It's like a philosophy. It's like, I don't know what to describe it. But you know what I'm talking about. It's like a, let's not be different. Let's not try to stand out in a crowd.
In Hong Kong, there's definitely, like, a mentality of, like, we should innovate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because
mm-hmm.
it's just, like, a food obsessed,
young, you know,
it's just
culture.
A food obsessed culture. And then they have this this site called Open Rice, I think, that's just mm-hmm. like Yelp, but, you know, for foodies. And they'll, like, everyone who reviews will upload, like, 20 pictures of the food that they just ate at a restaurant. And it's mm-hmm. just, like, more food obsessed culture. And I think you just need, like, a lot of people demanding new innovative food for innovation to occur.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so your egg rolls on the cover look really, really tasty, and they don't look like any egg rolls I've seen in the Chinese takeout places.
Because not greasy.
Yeah, it doesn't look too greasy. It looks crispy on the outside, but it's filled with a lot of greens. I see, like, fresh scallions sticking out, and shrimp.
Some
and
cabbage,
some,
yeah.
Oh, cabbage and mushrooms. And why are egg rolls so often in Chinese takeout places just cabbage, right?
Yeah. Well, it is, like, very economical vegetables, so I think that's why they
leftovers stuffed and fried.
But if you, like, cook it for yourself, make it for yourself at home, you obviously want to use better ingredients. Uh-huh.
No, and your recipe is delicious. It's gorgeous. It totally trumps any that you'll find taking out. What about chop suey? Do you have that in here?
Yes, there is a recipe for chop suey.
What does chop suey mean?
A chop suey is basically, like, bits and pieces. Like, mm-hmm. it comes from the Cantonese word chop suey, which is just, like, literally, like, leftover bits and pieces. And, like, there's a lot of folklore about how chop suey got started. Like, there's, like, two different stories circulating. Like, one is that, like, in the San Francisco in the 1800s, like, people working on the railroad just stumbled into a Chinese restaurant late at night and demanded to be served. And the cook just, like, whipped up something and just called it chop suey.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, another story about how some Chinese diplomat came to visit and was, like, at the Waldorf Astoria and just demanded, like, this chop suey dish.
And then it got...
So who knows, like, whether there's truth to any of those, but I think, like, it most likely evolved just from, like, a tradition of, like, people just cooking whatever they have left over into, mm-hmm. like, a main dish, like, just reusing leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom did that, like, tons of Chinese mothers did that, and I think, like, immigrants who came to the U.S. probably did that too.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it just became chop suey.
Yeah, and became known as this, like, recipe too,
yeah,
to follow,
yeah.
Which is ironic if you don't use leftovers, but that's okay. So we're going to just cut to a quick little musical interlude, and let's chat more with Diana Kwan when we're right back.
Summertime. It's summertime. And the bars are closing. The bars are closing. All the doors are open.
This one's called Throw a Parade. buy cookies on the heritageradionetwork.org.
So find your friends, yeah. So find your friends. Tell them what they want to hear. Tell them what they want to hear. I tell them not to be so. I tell them not to be so goddamn uptight.
Today's program has been brought to you by AmeriCraft. AmeriCraft and 360 Cookware are proud sponsors of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. AmeriCraft is an American company, and like Heritage Radio Network, they provide the best. Their 360 Cookware is made of the highest quality ingredients, like United States steel. It is made in the greenest cookware manufacturing plant in the world. AmeriCraft makes great cookware and is focused on improvement. 360 Cookware is their exclusive line. It's a contemporary line of cookware and bakeware intended to let you, the Heritage Radio Network listeners, have a unique cooking experience. Its vapor seal allows food to be cooked in its natural juices, preserving all of the vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients without added water, oils, or fats. 360 Cookware invites you to learn more about how this process works on their website, www.360cookware.com. Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave.
Cooking issues!
Who am I fooling? This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die!
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you'd think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're back chatting with Diana Kwan on her latest The Chinese Takeout Cookbook, Quick and Easy Dishes to Prepare at Home, published by Ballantine Books. Do you have classes coming up?
Yeah, I do. Actually, this coming Sunday, I have a class at Ice Culinary. It's called...
And anyone can sign up, right?
And anyone can sign up, yeah. We have a few spots left. This is going to be a great class. It's a class based on the cookbook. So it's just called Taking Out Chinese, and we'll do 8 recipes from the book, including like egg rolls, sweet and sour pork, egg drop soup, like just tons of like your favorite Chinese takeout foods.
Cool. 8 recipes, that's good for a class. You can master it. Do you get a book at the end of the class? Or
you can yes,
that sounds good.
And autograph too.
Oh my god. Sign up. No, seriously, that sounds really, really fun. I noticed that you don't have, and I love hearing your like stories. You like know everything about like chop suey, it seems. But what about the fortune cookie?
The fortune cookie, that... It came,
you left it out of the
book.
Oh,
the recipe, yeah. Well, it's like quick and easy Chinese food, so
oh,
making
true.
Fortune cookies,
oh my God,
is actually
right.
Like, you can't really do it without potentially burning your hands. So I care about my readers. I don't want them burning their hands.
That's so funny. Yeah, those things are really manufactured stuff. Okay, but you do have really good sweets that are awesome. There's almond cookies, which are really cute. Chinese butter cookies, coconut buns.
Yep.
I haven't thought about those in forever. And sesame ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Black sesame ice cream.
Oh, I love that. And the egg tarts, which are not, you know, those little egg custard tarts that you see in the dim sum places.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not as hard as they look, actually.
Well, there's like a more like traditional way to do it with, I think like some people use a lard crust to get it extra flaky.
Yeah.
And then I have a very streamlined recipe where you use pre-made pastry and and you make it in a mini muffin tin.
Yeah.
Because those little tins that they have at the Chinese bakery are a little hard to find.
Yeah. And I notice like when I eat them at the Chinese dim sum places, they do have a really like fatty tasting crust.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that's lard.
That's lard. Great. So, yeah, I mean, also, a lot of the Chinese restaurants do use lard when they're stir frying.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they use MSG.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that at all.
No, definitely not. You can use good quality ingredients, like, for example, dried shiitake mushrooms are a great way to get a really, like, umami flavor in soups and stir-fries without using MSG.
Mm.
So you could just
save your soaking water from the dried shiitake mushrooms?
Oh, yeah, you could do that, too. Yeah. But just, like, having a lot of shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, in the soup?
In the soup, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. In a few recipes, it seems like, a lot of them are kind of reaching outside of the realm of the average, as far as I know, takeout restaurants. Mm-hmm. You have the Taiwanese beef noodle soup.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a really famous recipe. But if you're not a Taiwanese, you probably wouldn't know it.
Yeah, I just wanted to include some recipes that have become, like, popular in the past decade or two, mm-hmm. in the U.S. too. Not just limiting myself to, like,
absolutely,
just, like,
yeah.
takeout.
It's always a constantly evolving genre.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And Buddha's Delight. I haven't thought of that in a while. What is that? Just anything that's not meat?
It's like a traditional dish that's served for New Year's. Like, there should be, like, traditionally there should be like one dish that's, like, all vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, traditionally, like, there is, like, one meal that should be all vegetarian, but over time, it's just because China is such a big meat loving country, we just do, like, especially in my family, we just do one dish that's all vegetarian, and
okay.
It's like a great dish of, like, mushrooms and, like, lily buds and what's it called? The fungus, the black fungus. That's
Woodier mushrooms.
Yeah, woodier mushrooms, yeah. And vermicelli noodles, and mm-hmm. it's just like a big pot of all these great vegetarian ingredients, like braised
together. Oh yeah, I see. So it's like that, like bubbling, like stew, mm-hmm. of yummy veggies.
Yeah.
Cool. What is with the lily buds? They're dried lily buds that you mm-hmm. can find, and you soak them. And
yeah, you soak them, and then you cut off the little pieces that are hard at the end, and then
okay.
you just pull apart the strands.
And so they add a little bit of texture, mm-hmm. and they're pretty.
Yeah.
But not much. It's a little floral tasting, I guess?
Not really.
No. They don't taste much like
no.
anything. Okay. What is your favorite recipe to make?
My favorite recipe to make, it depends on my mood, but I always love the cold sesame noodles. They're just great to make a whole big batch at a time, and then just save them. You could eat them, like, straight out of the fridge,
mm-hmm.
at midnight when you're getting the munchies. And it's, like, a great sauce that uses sesame paste and peanut butter and chili sauce and vinegar.
And I've seen you can use just peanut butter, too,
mm-hmm.
or sesame paste, and your recipe has both,
yeah.
which I never thought of doing. So that must be really tasty.
Ew, it's a really
good combination.
Tasty. That's the recipe that I always recommend to people who uh-huh. are like, what's the first thing I should make out of this book? I don't know. There's like 80 recipes. I can't decide.
And sometimes you could even use spaghetti.
Yeah.
That's
perfect. Like my preferred noodle to use.
Yeah. When it's cold, it just, like, sticks,
mm-hmm.
or it doesn't
has,
stick
It just
as
has,
much.
Like, the best texture for,
right.
like, for the sauce.
Nice. All right, so that's your favorite dish these days, but
mm-hmm.
what do you say is the most romantic, perfect date meal, in your opinion?
Does it have to be Chinese or, like, anything?
It could be anything.
Yeah. Well, since it's winter, I'm craving, like, anything that goes well with red wine, like steak or lasagna,
mm-hmm.
or, like, spaghetti with meatballs.
Something that sticks to your bones.
Incidentally, Sichuan food also goes great with red wine, like semi-sweet red wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet red wine, really?
Like semi-sweet. You need like a little bit of sweetness to like counteract like the sugar and the spiciness.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because when I'm having a Sichuan like fire attack on my mouth, I can't even think of alcohol. I'm like, oh no.
Oh, beer is great for
Sichuan. Beer is good for that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just gonna spread throughout.
Yeah.
And bubbles, and it's going to...
I feel it's better than water.
Yeah. I know a lot of people feel that. Okay, so... But I'll try the wine.
Yeah.
Because I've never tried that before. I don't know.
Like a Tempranillo with Sichuan food? So good.
I don't know. When I'm like... When I have too much heat in my palate, I just panic. That's my
so
only...
So what do you drink?
Nothing. It's just like... Unpleasant for 5 minutes. There's nothing you can do. It's helpless. But, okay, so red wine, steak.
Yes.
What would go with that for you?
What do you mean, like on the steak?
Or just steak and red wine?
Just steak and red wine. Maybe potatoes, I guess.
Okay, just a slab of bloody steak and red wine. That's the ultimate date meal. Mm-hmm. I just lost my headphones for a while there, and I panicked. So, okay, that's an interesting one, because usually, this Diana, you're like a, you're a wonderfully like petite, thin girl, and it's always people like that who say that answer.
Oh,
yeah. So
is that like the default answer or something?
Yeah, no, but people who do say that answer are thin, young, cute ladies. You know, I don't know. It's just, you know, that's just how it works. And okay, so what about the perfect date meal if it were Chinese food? Like, say you're going to cook at home together with your special person.
I think dumplings would be good, because you to like make them together, and it's fun. It's like a fun afternoon activity, and then you get to eat them all.
Well,
at the end.
Afternoon date. This is a long
afternoon
date
leading into night.
Okay, so you have to invite your date over at 3.
Yeah, and get them to work.
That's a lot of dumplings. You can't make just like a few for, I don't know, appetizer size portion.
Oh, you can, but it's like fun to just like crank out
That's
a whole
true.
Bunch at once.
I like the project based mm-hmm. date approach
yep.
there. That's cool. All right. So, and dumplings do make a good meal in its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can eat a lot of them for a meal
yep.
because they're balanced. They have veggies and meat inside them and yep. they're starch. But what kind of dipping sauce do you prefer?
I love just a very simple dipping sauce of like soy sauce, Chinese black vinegar, and sesame oil, and mm-hmm. sometimes a little bit of sriracha on the side.
Mm-hmm. So what are like some of the, speaking of like, you know, black vinegar and soy sauce, what are like the must-haves in order to make most of the dishes that you should have in your pantry?
So the must-haves, obviously soy sauce. Chinese black vinegar is great. It's like an aged vinegar, and it's a
kinda
little
like balsamic.
Yeah, it's kind of like balsamic, and in a pinch you could use a good quality balsamic vinegar as a substitute.
Hmm.
Chinese rice wine is also great. It like helps deglaze the pan and has yeah. adds a little bit of flavor to the marinade and the sauce. And you can also use dry sherry as a substitute.
Okay.
Sesame oil, oyster sauce, hoisin sauce, and my personal favorite ingredient, if you can find it, is it's not a necessity, but it's a nice additive, the Sichuan pepper.
Oh, peppercorn.
Yeah.
Huajiao.
Yeah.
Cool.
You can add it to a bunch of like spicy dishes in the book. Like there are a lot of dishes with chili sauce or dried chili peppers, and it's a great. It adds a great like citrusy floral character
yeah,
to the dish.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not spicy on its own.
No, it's not. It's a little numbing.
It's numbing. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's kind
in
of
a good way.
Just peppery. Yeah, on its
yeah.
own without adding something crazy like chili oil.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna kill you. All right, so cool. That sounds pretty easy to follow. Definitely will be tackling some of these recipes, because I grew up in the States too, and my mom did not cook this stuff, but, and my mom's Chinese, so so it's really fun, and I love how it's like all in one volume too, because you just like a hit list of all those things that you're
oh, yeah,
always looking
exactly.
up. And from your blog, you know, this is like just a great compendium to complement it. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And happy Chinese New Year soon. Don't forget about it. It's February 10th. You should cook a lot of this yummy stuff. Enjoy it. All right. Well, so that's about it. We'll see you next week. Thanks to everyone at Heritage. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.